This is a Pinball News production.
What I want to do today is talk about a topic that could be considered risky or sensitive to a crowd of folks like us. So hopefully, as I try to convey this information to you, if you know me, you will know that my heart is with real, touchy-feely, conventional pinball. But there's something pretty special about this that's going on right now. So for those of you that don't know me, let me just tell you a little bit about myself. I do write for Gamer Magazine. For 5 years, I worked on a pinball show in Southern Illinois. Been collecting for a long time. I've owned over 200 pinball machines. I've got probably, right there it says over 50. I don't know. Sometimes, some of you guys that's been at it for a while, you remember that you got four more over at someone's house, or, oh, I forgot all about that storage building that's got 12 more. But can you pass up a warehouse raid ever? No way. So anyway, there's a couple of the game rooms. I've tried to clean up and organize my life, and I have a couple of game rooms at home. The one on the left right there is what I call the 80s arcade, and that was prepared for my son's birthday party. That's where he wanted to go. He could go anywhere. He said, let's do it in the pin shop. And then over to the right is my basement. And there are some of the people, the first people that helped coordinate our pinball show that we did down south, are there. And it's a real crayon-colored world. It's all primary colors down the basement. And it's a really fun. Both places are designed to be fun, just to be in the environment. I like it. Sometimes I'll walk in after a couple of weeks, and I can smell it. In the 80s arcade, it smells like the 80s. It's awesome. Okay, and the last thing that's kind of interesting, if you may know me from the magazine, you may know me from the Silverball podcast, you may know me from the Pinball Show, or even Life After Death videos, but the thing to know about me is that this new project in my life is this master's I'm working on in professional media management, where I'm researching the console video game industry. And I think it's fascinating, because I didn't really want to go in that direction, but the impact on the console video game, the console video game's impact on media, especially when it started taking money away from Hollywood, became very important, and it's now a big function of study. And through that study, it's actually influenced the way that I look at this topic that we're talking about today. What I want to do is define something that in my studies already that has become obvious, and it may be to every one of us in here. But having a deep, memorable gaming experience, here's some of the elements that relate to that. A good playing experience makes you feel like you are accomplishing clear objectives. If you interview or you discuss what makes a great game with game designers that are spending millions and millions of dollars, they have large conglomerate companies that are sponsoring them and paying millions of dollars for, you know, as many as maybe even 2 years of work. They know these clear objectives that they have to reach for themselves and their stockholders. A rich combination of audio, art, and game design, very important. Talking to people in the industry, in our industry, pinball industry, that we hold, it's very important. They will say the same thing. A theme or storyline that the player can connect with, very important. Sometimes whenever you don't have a nice theme, you can have the best geometry in a pinball playfield, but without a theme, sometimes it's painful, and vice versa. And incorporating a social experience is very important to pinball, hasn't it been? Whenever you play in tournaments together, it's more fun to compete. And then it brings the player back to repeat the experience. That's the most important part in coin-op, is that you keep the player coming back again and again. Okay, so a different angle on my pinball story as it relates to this, pinball simulation. Yes, I started playing pinball in the 70s as a little kid. I used to be the little guy that stood next to the big guy and hoping that he'd win a free game and give it to me. You know, there's a study of this social guilt that kids back in the day used to lay on big kids, you know. Don't you feel sorry for me, dude? You know, my mom's left me here and I've already blown my money. Or to ask those key questions like, how did you get so good? But that was me. Everything about pinball fascinated me. If there was no money and there was no one in the 7-Eleven and there was four pinball machines, I would be very likely just to look at the game for a long time. I just thought it was great. I still do. Everything about a computer fascinated me then, and maybe not as much now because it's a career, but it was very interesting. And so bringing those two things together, there was this game called David's Midnight Magic that came out for the Commodore 64. I remember receiving an advertisement. It was in a magazine. Has anybody ever seen David's Midnight Magic? Remember it? Okay, cool. Well, I mean, it wasn't that cool, was it? It was cool then, but to go back and play it now is pretty brutal. What it did was it allowed me to do something I always wanted to do, and that was play for free. I didn't have any money. I mean, I guess that was probably when I was about 14 or 13 years old. I couldn't afford to buy a game. My parents would freak out. No one ever really thought about that idea. But to own a piece of software that allowed me to play pinball was very exciting. And so I had to do I started on a track of pretending. In 1978, I think it was, whenever video pinball was created by Atari, people had to really, really pretend. So this wasn't quite that much pretending. David's Midnight Magic was pretty cool. By the way, the three of us in here, or four of us that know it, what game was that? You guys all know that, yeah. Steve Ritchie is a popular person to rip off, I guess, for computer games, because we'll see that later. Pinbot came on the scene and changed everything. It really did, because, see, what happened was David's Midnight Magic became a game that I held tournaments on in my basement on a black and white TV with the neighborhood kids. And then so suddenly we had this in my community. We had where Pinbot became of interest to operators, local operators, two different ones, who must have connected with that game because they put it out on location. And I had sort of recruited some people through virtual pinball simulation to take a look at pinball whenever they were out in the real world. And so we had a couple of nice pinbots that were out in my community. And one of the guys that played with me in the basement said, "Hey, Rob, there's a new pinball machine. I've played it. It's really cool. It's called Pinbot. Let's do our tournaments on a real machine. How about that?" I mean, so there's a way there where it works and ping pongs back and forth. And I think we'll see that. We see that continuing, and we hope it continues. The Amiga computer came later in my life when I went to Murray State University. I was studying electrical engineering technology. I had a girlfriend. We got we left for campus earlier, and we got snowed in. And so I was going through all this Amiga software and rediscovered a very, very cool application called Pinball Dreams. Has anybody experienced this game? Look at that. Fans, could you say you're a fan of the game?
Definitely.
What is it that you like about it? I love it, personally.
Pinball Dreams, and especially Pinball Fantasy, were the most realistic ones there were at the time.
Absolutely.
And they were designed with rules like real machines.
How about the alphanumeric display? Did you like that?
Absolutely,
yes. This is the point. That is exactly the point. This was not a scripted thing. How about that? I'm not the only crazy one. We got several crazies. The thing about this was, it took that whole experience of me having to make believe with this David's Midnight Magic to a smaller level. I didn't have to pretend as much. If you look at those four tables, they really have a defining moment in the software industry of yes, we can make pinball for a computer and make it fun, and make it exciting. What you have are four tables that have progressive shot bonuses, we'll say, or payoffs. So in other words, if you do a left ramp, right ramp in succession, you get big points. Look at the far right one there. That is called Nightmare, but you spell out Graveyard, and it's also got other names depending on where you get it or on what platform.
One of those, of course, is T2. Nightmare is T2.
There it is. So that's actually, there's Steve Ritchie again. See how the software people, they come up with the great, that was the best one of the four, too, in my opinion. So they rip off Steve Ritchie again. The thing is about that particular title is it made some money. And whenever things make money, software developers are interested in trying to make more of it. So how can they replicate that or duplicate that? And so, by the way, that previous slide where you saw those titles, that again brought me back to real pinball. I began to see how much fun I could have, and I began to seek out real machines. And I found an Addams Family and a Twilight Zone on the campus. And my wife, actually, who really kind of hates pinball right now, over the last 12 years especially, when we got married, we started looking for pinball to play, and in our town we found Medieval Madness and Junkyard, and then it was just me playing because I was really into it, and she was like, you know, probably just going because I made her to make me feel good. But Microsoft Pinball Arcade in 1998 comes out, and it was an amazing application. How many people have played it? You know, it's a Gottlieb collection. Now, you know, think about where we were in 98, 99, 2000. In that time, that was mind-blowing. It was a mind-blowing production. And, you know, Microsoft had partnered with another studio, but whenever they got done, they rarely do anything unless they go all the way. I know you can argue that point if you're in the computer nerd circle like I am. But in this case, it was fantastic. And so my father-in-law, I just got married, and my father-in-law had, he and I hadn't really connected yet. It's Dennis Blankenship, if any of you guys know him. He's an EM collector now. But then he was just my father-in-law. And he had no idea, we really didn't connect on any level yet. And in fact, he just always had that bitter look ever since I asked to marry his daughter, where he's grimaced, you know. But he opens up my garage door to get something out, and he finds 7 pinball machines in my garage. And he couldn't believe it. So suddenly I'm getting these, you know, for Christmas time rolls around, and I get all this outdated pinball software. I got the real machine. I don't even need that stuff. But he didn't, and he had Microsoft Pinball Arcade. We were having tournaments at his house. This is very ironic. Back then, where we gathered around a computer and played pinball, you know, what's the next game? We're gonna play Haunted House next. You know, I'm gonna whip him at that, and my high score is listed. Now today, whenever we go over there, we play real pinball tournaments on EM machines. But it started here. It's kind of interesting. Visual Pinbaim and Visual Pinball. Roll out. And what's interesting about this, again, is that these are editors. These are not, you're not going to have to pay for this stuff. You download this for free. MAME guys. How many MAME people are in here that ever use MAME? There's quite a few of you. So a multi-arcade machine emulator for pinball allows us to use pinball ROMs, right, wrong, or indifferent, and inject them into an emulation program. And then Visual Pinball allows us to connect, the I.O., we'll say. And so some people really begin to pour a lot of hours into this and to develop these pinball machine tables. Here's one of them right there. That's the DE, the Data East Simpsons game. Up top, we see what the DMD output is for visual pin or for Pinbaim. And it's pretty cool. So whenever like the Linux effect, you could say, whenever you get enough of people who feel passionately about something, software in this case, there's almost unlimited, you know, abilities that people can reach. And so the library, once this is released to the public, the library of these available games grows and it grows and it grows and it grows. It was neat. So I noted here the first free program that allowed anyone to be a pinball designer and share it with the world, and easy integration of original pinball code, which is important to a lot of these people who designed that. What are you running over there?
I have running my Wallace and Gromit game on VP.
So this is your original game?
This is my original game.
Well, it's a very good thank you for that segue, because it's not just people's game. I'd like to play that, actually, at some point while we're here. what you have is not just games that's easy to port over. I don't want to say anything that's easy. It takes a lot of time. There has to be a lot of passion behind it. But the code is nothing that you really have to rewrite or re-script or anything here, unless you build your own game. So there's a lot of passion over there for those. To me, the most exciting part of it is the original designs. Because I've owned a lot of pinball, and my friends have a lot of real pinball. So these original designs for these platforms are fantastic. Future pinball for me, we actually have arguments about this now, so it's kind of fun. But future pinball for me was very exciting, because for the first time it made use of a 3D engine. Where every single frame is rendered, and if you have a video card that is on par with, you know, an average gamer video card, it's pretty good. The rendering is very nice. You can change your perspective using many different keys. I wish my laptop was capable of running it well. I would show you. Right here. Loosely based upon Visual Pinball, it does use 3D model components, so any people who have done 3D rendering or animation, you know exactly what I'm talking about. This is not a layered type of play field. It is actually 3 dimensions, X, Y, and Z. The ball knows that it's going underneath a ramp, or it's on top of a ramp surface, or it actually has an air ball and it's stuck, which balls get stuck in both of these. The output is stunning if you use an entry-level 3D gamer card or better, whereas Visual Pinball didn't really require that. So there's differences here. But for me, the key difference was the playing experience. So Blind Mankind Pinball is a group of people, 2 people. I believe one of them is in France and the other one is in maybe Spain. So it's a little distance there. The two of them collaborated to make some fantastic games for the future pinball format. What happened to me is I downloaded Future Pinball upon building a PC, and it had a pretty good video card. And I said, you know, I'm really going to give this a chance here. Let's see what is new out there. What original ideas and innovations have come out with these people who are designing tables? Designing tables. That's exactly what they're doing. By the way, how many design jobs are available right now in the world for pinball design to get paid? There's one. It's not available, though. So you're right. Zero is right. So here is your opportunity to be a designer. You got that great idea? This is it. These guys went all the way. This game that you see is a flyer for Three Angels, a pinball simulation. It's fantastic. It's got a great theme, deep rule sets, professional graphics, professional sounds and music. There's hundreds of sound bites in there. They have tried to copy some of the best pinball designs ever. I played it, and I had a great experience. I thought it was fantastic, and I said, I have to put this in a cabinet because I'm tired of doing this. That's not pinball. I mean, it is pinball, but it's not. This deserves a real cabinet. That's what I said. So I started. This is what I did, and I'm going to go quickly, because I want to make sure we have time for questions. Okay, so I had some PC equipment. I actually went and bought one. I was getting this. This is how many frames per second. This is what kills you in Future Pinball. 14 was the peak. 14 frames a second. That's awful. That's when you flip and the ball's already drained. So I put in a real video card, and I was over. There's 118 frames a second there. That's a lot. I mean, so it's fluid. It's very smooth. Then I actually connected it to some better equipment there with a better monitor, a 22-inch monitor turned vertically, laying down. I used this old CRT there to the right to display the back glass. So now I'm using two displays. It's not that hard, really, though. I mean, any PC, any kid that's 12 years old or older can help you do this. And here's the other thing, too. I wanted to use equipment that I could bail on this project and I could actually use in my life. So I got a PC that I could give to my wife, or I could use it in my shop. I got a 22-inch widescreen monitor, which would be a welcome upgrade, but it was all working so well, I didn't need to do that. I had a Dirty Harry. I took some flack over this on some forums. To make it very clear, this was a water-damaged, re-imported Dirty Harry. It's happier now than it would have been if I would have burnt it. So what I did was, based upon the LCD size, I began to chop this cabinet down because, again, it was water damaged. And I salvaged everything. I took the side rails off of it, the hinges for the head, I mean, everything, all the guts out of it. I mean, I was kind of like Dr. Scott, man. I probably still have sawdust there from the job. And I had a number of woodshop tools, so, you know, I kind of do that as a hobby, too. So it was... Well, Elvira was just an inspiration. You know, I'll tell you what, whenever you're trying to design this thing, you know, you're a cabinet designer. You're kind of like Dennis Nordman's first gig. So I'm thinking, do I want to reinvent the wheel, or do I want to copy something that's good? And I had an Elvira that was close to me, an Elvira and the Party Monsters. And actually, I didn't copy its head so much because it's a little different. But yeah, I mean, it was an inspiration for measuring sort of the scale of things. Any pinball machine would do, by the way, just to get your scope down, I think. So I really packed this cabinet tight. If you take a look at that computer. There's no room. That red box there in the front, that's an audio amplifier for, that's a Walmart special. That's like $45. Again, I'm going to recycle everything, and if this thing sucks, then what do I got in it? You know, nothing much, really. The audio amp, I could give it to the kid down the road, you know, put in his car. Cooling was important. A secondary power supply to fire that thing up. It was easy. You just use a computer power supply. What you see right there is just one of my bench supply I use in my electronics bench. But I actually put a PC power supply in there. There's tricks to make all this stuff happen with very little money. Preserving the traditional head design. The back glass fits. I say traditional because speakers are on the bottom. So it's sort of traditional. How about those speakers, huh? They came out of a Mustang. Again, we're not going to do anything. We're not going to go out and order some special speakers. They sound great, by the way.
Was it a water damage
muscle? No, sir. No, it was a trade-in. I traded it in. I took the speakers out. Put the originals back in. I'm just going to keep going because I want to make sure I cover it. This little device is fantastic. I love it. You guys do MAME? Are you Ultimark fans? What do you think, Ultimark or Groovy Game Gear? Which is your favorite? For this application specifically, I like Ultimark a lot. What it does is it just allows you to really quickly assign your keystrokes. Every one of these things that whenever you go up to this cabinet and you touch the flipper buttons or you start button, whatever, you know, those are keys. And so this little board, it helps you really handle that issue. It's such a fast way and easy to program to make this work. You know, I was having so much fun with this thing. I got to tell you a quick story. I got to make it super quick because I promised. Steve Rothschild, you guys know who I'm talking about? He's a Silverball Podcast buddy of mine. I really wanted to surprise him with this thing. It was so cool. I'm playing a game, a couple of these games by Blind Mankind Pinball. I'll just give you the titles. Three Angels and Dead Hunters. Three Angels and Dead Hunters. Both of these games are loaded with beautiful graphics. They're very, very well thought out designs. And they have great audio. And you saw the car amplifier and you saw these 6x9 speakers. I had it turned up pretty loud. And I started the game and I ran off to go get some tools out of another part of my building. And what I didn't realize is that when that game loads up, it's real quiet at first. It uses like a movie soundtrack dynamic range, which is very, very quiet and then very, very loud. It's a horror themed game. It's scary. Is it scary? Well, it scared me. It's very late at night. I tend to work between 10 and 2 in the morning a lot of times out at my shop. And I hear this thing wake up. And I hear like the sound of bones cracking and a woman screaming and sounds like flesh is getting ripped open. And I go back to my shop and there's this game. There you go. See the bottom picture? No backlash in it there. Actually, the top picture is more like what it was like when this story I'm telling you. And it really creeped me out because this game was just fired up and it's all this scary sounds and it's dark and it's late. So I start to play the game though. And this particular system that I made, it wasn't really easy to turn the volume up or down. Once you had it set, that's really where it was. And I thought, well, I'll plunge the ball, make sure it's behaving and playing like it should, and then I'll get out, go back to Windows, and turn the volume down. But I really got into the game. I was really having one of those connection moments that I just talked about earlier. I was really, really connecting with this game. To the point to where I wanted to figure out the rules a little deeper. There's this demon ball, a black ball that comes out. And you have to send it to the blood extractor, I think, is the process to capture this demon. I mean, it's really, and the storyline is so thought out. It's amazing. So as I'm playing the game, I look at the clock. You ever have those moments where it's been an hour, but you think it's been 5 minutes? And I realize I need to go in. So I shut everything down, and I turn out the lights. And it's one of those, my shop, you turn out the lights, and then it could be like a 30-foot walk in the dark, you know, to get to the door. And then you go through another. I got three rooms in there. And I was creeped out. I was really kind of like looking over my shoulder. And then when I was walking down the 120-foot sidewalk to get to my house, I was kind of going a little quicker. I'm serious. That worked. That game had a sincere effect on me, which is exactly what these guys that designed the table, Three Angels, wanted to have. It's a success. So then that was the late night test. And then the Steve Rothschild test was basically having Steve-O come over and be critical because he's always critical of my crap. Any restoration that I do, he gives me crap about it. How come you didn't clean underneath the freaking leg levelers? I don't know. He's always giving me crap. So he comes over, and I'm ready for him to beat it up. And you know, he enjoyed himself. It was a little 22-inch monitor, and somehow it sucked his mind down into that little experience, and he connected with it. Until you open up some really rough tables. But you play the real good ones, you really get it. So what happened? Here it is. There's the final product. I went all the way. I got graphics on it. I put some crazy little lights on it. I actually used some Walmart glow balls or something. You squeeze them and they blink. And I kind of hacked those out and put them behind flasher domes there on the back. So they would flash. It's a little too crazy. And I was able to take this to college students on the campus where I work at Southern Illinois University and encourage electronic students to be innovative and to quit talking about it, but just do it. And here's an example of that. And it turned out that we had some pinball, or some college students become pinball fans. And they actually joined our Saluki Pinball Club. You know, so that's good. We grew that too. It tests well in my game room whenever I invite people to come over and play with us. they tend to like step back, and then they come back to it again, because it kind of freaks them out. This little thing, how do you play this thing? Rob made it. It might shock you, you know. My 5-year-old, it was his favorite game. Now down in my basement, I have about 17 machines, all newer DMD games. My 5-year-old, every day, whenever he got home, he grabbed the stool and he turned on Minipin. And he played it, and he played it, and he played it, and he played it. He's been through 250 or so tables on it. You know, he could I go to him. Hey, son, what's a cool table? You know, one that's a dot matrix game. He's 5. I mean, you're right. It's been a rough life for him. He's had to live with me, always talking about this topic. So I'll ask him, what's a good dot matrix game, son? And he'll tell me. Or a good alphanumeric, or a good EM. Whenever my father-in-law is around, we have to bring out the old Gottlieb EMs. And they're great. They're fantastic on this platform. And then so I built another one. There's two, actually. This project just got finished Wednesday. Has anybody seen this? I brought it out last night. Did anybody get to see it? Anybody else? It's out there. That's Pin Simulator. It's bigger brother. Graphic design work. I wanted to really, if I'm going to do it this time, I wanted to make it right, you know, do it as best I could. And so the sound system inside of this thing is a 120-watt Logitech sound system. The idea is to really get the volume out, which it will. I can guarantee you can clear a circle around that out there in the exhibit hall. But the point of that power was for an MP3 jukebox app. So I can take it out whenever I'm entertaining my friends on 4th of July. They can play some pinball. We'll have the jukebox going on. They can even surf the web. A pinball machine, you can surf the web. That's kind of sacrilegious, isn't it? And some other people have built homebrew cabinets as well. Here's a couple of very neat ideas. There's a lot of innovations going on here in this area. Look at this wood rail cabinet on the right. Isn't that nice? When that guy got done with that, this is on the Future Pinball forums. I was flipping through these pictures, and I just couldn't wait to type in a message to this guy and say, this is gorgeous. That was beautiful. I asked everybody to bring stuff to Expo. I was the only one. Well, I mean, they're all over the world, though, you know, so it's a little tough to throw it on the plane. But anyway, I thought that was gorgeous. Some really good ideas. Final notes, and I don't want to just read this text if you care. Know this point. No matter how you feel about pinball simulation, Space Cadet, that little crappy game that's on every Windows machine. I mean, not everyone, but look at that. It's delivered pinball to millions and millions of people. That's a fantastic statistic here at Pinball Expo, that it's reached that many people. I remember whenever, early on when I was a collector, and there were some friends of ours that found out, you know, I kind of kept it secret for a while. I don't know why. I was in a closet pinball collector. And, well, my wife thought people would think I was weird. And then it turned out that people just want to come over and play pinball all the time. But I remember a girl going, pinball? I know pinball. I play it all the time in my car. And I said, how do you do that? This girl's a pharmaceutical rep. I said, how do you do that? Well, you know, whenever I'm waiting to see a doctor, I open up my Windows, so she's not a computer user, and I start up my pinball game. And she described it to me. It was Space Cadet. So it's in everywhere. It's all over the place. Look at this. Xbox 360 and PS3 are getting Pinball Hall of Fame, the Williams Collection, the Gottlieb Collection. It's available for download on the PlayStation Network. Interesting, isn't it, that we continue to see licensed? I mean, this is the Wii. I have a note there, don't I? Yeah. But in the bottom line there, look at that. Pinball Hall of Fame Williams Collection for the Wii is beyond 250,000 units sold, and some expect it to reach 1 million in its 2-year life. It has the attention because it's making money. And in a really negative kind of time for conventional pinball, it's not really that hard, hopefully, to reach and take a look at this and say, you know what, we're still able to affect, you know, hundreds of thousands of people with pinball. It's just not how we really want it to be. But it's happening. And it's really cool because I'll tell you what's really cool is whenever you listen to a gamer podcast, I have to listen to these and draw stuff out for research. And they're okay. It's not pinball. But I just heard on the way here, some guys talking about the Pacific show. What's it called? Pacific Coast, right? Pacific Pinball Expo. They were talking about GameSpot 2. What's the name of the podcast?
GameSpot.
That's the name of the podcast? You sure?
Yeah.
Bombcast? I think it's Bombcast.
Have you seen that?
I'll tell you, because I have it right here. It's Video Game Outsiders. Yeah, these guys went to the show, and they were talking about pinball, connecting with their caveman-type roots. What the hell is that? But they were talking about games that they are familiar with. A lot of them are familiar with from these things, these recreations, these collections. And so when they got there, they talked about, oh, man, my favorite game is F-14. Mine's Black Knight. It was fascinating to hear that. It's also very funny to hear them talk like they know what they're talking about, which they do in the game industry, video game industry, talk about pinball. It's kind of funny. So, anyway, that's about it. There, see, Rob, we caught up plenty of time. We got questions, though, probably, right?
So you talked at the beginning about the five components for memorable gaming experience, and one of them ties in very closely with what we were talking about last night for hours on end.
Uh-huh. I missed that.
That is, the experience is worth repeating. Now, some people know of, they might not admit to it themselves, but they know there's this phenomenon where you play a real pinball game until you've done everything, and then you're sick of it, you don't want to repeat, according to this psychology, you reach Balinor or whatever it might be in that game, and you're done with it. If you own it, you're going to sell the game because you've done everything.
Right, right.
So that would seem to be a violation of that principle. Are you thinking about that?
Well, yeah, that's very good, because in the research that I'm doing, that is a very interesting and important point. The what the industry wants to do, and whether or not they're accomplishing it, is they want to get, this is my opinion of what I've digest here, but it is that they, in a pinball experience, whenever you play a game, let's take Lord of the Rings, just for example, just so I can throw this point if they didn't hear you. And if you beat the game, and you're, or let's say a game maybe with shallower rules, a modern game, whenever you beat that game, people tend to just turn it off and say, I'm done, I've done that, accomplished that, right? And so they lose interest. But what the gaming industry wants to do is to get people to return back, to have such a neat experience, a memorable experience with that game, not easily duplicatable with another title, a similar title, that it, you sort of have that, I mean, why do we go back, I don't know if we all do, but why do people go back and play Pac-Man, you know, again and again? I mean, they may leave for a month and then they come back, oh yeah, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, well, it's only been a month, but you know, maybe years go by. But in pinball, I don't know how to beat that, you know? I mean, I don't have that mentality, but I'm not that good at it either. I mean, I think it's a curse almost to be really, really good at pinball in a lot of ways too, because you could, on a modern game, you go all the way through it, and then maybe you feel like there's nothing left to explore. But I think there's always different angles and approaches. Josh and Zach Sharp gave a presentation at the Pinball, the Heartland Show, about different approaches to playing pinball. And that opened, you know, some people's eyes to that respect too. So I don't know. That's a problem. We got to figure that out. What was your question?
In some of your other talks in the past, you talked about your mini-pin and that the motion sensors would be able to, did you solve the technical part for that? Be able to make that work?
There's a company, Nanotech, came up with a solution for that. I played around with an accelerometer, and my intern actually had a pinball intern for a while. It was pretty fun. He got to do all the crap work I didn't like to do, you know, like fix the board hacks. But I had Aaron working on that project for a little while, and both of us got really busy, and never got. But Nanotech came out with an accelerometer built for that, that would interface. And I haven't got to play with it yet. But I've Nanotech, and right. And I'm using, what do they call that? Pinball something?
It's a motion board, basically, what they're calling it.
What, has it got a title for their whole...
They're called do-it-yourself cabinet kit.
Okay. Oh, they're going to do a cabinet kit?
Analog plunger. Okay. Also recognized by both Future Pinball.
That's a nice piece, too. And all my games, neither one of them have it, but I would like to get one.
I do with Josh. The whole thing is off-scanning. It's in the whole kit, includes the encoder, so you can have up to 16 controls as well.
Good. Good. I think that's good. That's going to be. That's important to seeing this thing continue to progress.
The manufacturer,
Nanotech Entertainment.
Okay.
Yeah. They're a real key player here in folks wanting to build their own cabinets. What was it? Did you have another part to that question, or was that it? Okay.
One of the things that's helped me up on building one is through my experience with Visual Pinball is input lag, and I was wondering, with you guys building cabinets, if you throw enough horsepower at it, does that go away, or are you still seeing a decent amount
Yeah.
Before you see those flippers.
Well, what he's talking about is latency, right? Whenever you hit a flipper button, is there a delay before the flipper actually flips? And the answer to that is variable. Does anybody build cabinets in here but me? Any other cabinet builders? Did you build a cabinet, or are you thinking of it?
Well, I'm thinking of it, yeah.
The machine that I got out there on the floor, wherever it is, well, you saw it. You know what I'm talking about. It's suffering from a latency issue, and that's a technology issue, I believe, with the ATI video card I didn't have with an NVIDIA video card, and I know the VP suffers badly with that card, so I think it's more card-related. And if I can find some more room to get mini pin, I got it in the car, so I'll have it out, and I think you'll find the latency is much less. So I think it's a lot of video card, plus a dual-core processor PC is going to be very important for that.
And improved a lot of the visual pinball 9, which is the ultra-pin version.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys are building cabinets, so we've had no latency.
And I hear, and I mean, I've been talking to some people, and they're saying, you got to give VP a second chance.
It's the ultra-pin version, and it's getting better as we develop the version. So.
Well, I'm gonna do it. I mean, I said I wouldn't do it, but I'm gonna do it now. Put VP in the cabinet, yeah.
You wouldn't do it.
Well, not back. Go back to 8.
No, you know. I think it's definitely more than worthwhile.
Yeah, I think I will.
You can actually have the cabinet angle, the actual cabinet perspective.
That's good, because I like playing that way. What else? Anybody else got another question? Are we crazy for building these cabinets? Is anybody inspired by this talk to play future pinball or anything like that? Good, good. Well, there's a few. It's fun. Give it a shot. Give it a try. Hey, St. Louis guys, you're inspired. Dan, did you ever build a cabinet? Okay. Are you? Still? Okay. It takes a while. It's a labor of love. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.